More of Lake Effect Now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. We talk every month with our astronomy contributor about things in the night sky, whether it's a new exoplanet discovery or the workings of a space-based telescope. But we also discuss the constellations, which have provided people with a map of the heavens for centuries and have allowed sailors to navigate the oceans well before there was GPS technology.
It is the constellations that also provide the framework for an imaginative new work of fiction for middle graders from Wisconsin writer Lindsay Becker. The book is called The Star Thief, and Becker will talk about it tonight at Milwaukee's Boswell Book Company, but she joins us first in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So what was the spark of inspiration that got this book going? Where did it all begin for you?
This is the third book that I wrote after I decided I wanted to try to publish something. So there was two that were just sort of nonsense. And then this one, those are great. They're great learning tools. But this one is just it's a lot of things that I always found interesting, constellations and like a little bit of like 19th century.
Little steampunk?
A little bit of like the beginnings of scientific exploration, kind of the end of the Age of Enlightenment stuff, and just sort of all mixed in there and with the story that was entertaining for me to write. Just stuff that kept me interested.
Was there one single scene, one single character, one single part of the story that came to you first?
I always start projects with the character. I have usually like their name and some general idea of age and background, and then like the inciting incident, like what they're doing, their problem they're solving. And from there I work. So there's like three central characters in here that have been the same from the beginning. I started writing about them. And
this is, for starters, Honorine.
Yes. Honorine is the she's the main character, the central protagonist. And then there's the mapmaker and there's Nautilus Oliphant. And those three were in there from the beginning. And then everybody else has come along at different times.
And we don't want to give too much away here, mm-hmm. but you mentioned constellations, and constellations play a pretty key role in this book because they are not just constellations. They are characters in a way. And that, mm-hmm. I think it took a while as I read this book for me to wrap my head around just what they were, which I'm guessing is part of the point.
I've always read the background thing about the constellations that's really interesting to me is they're very scientific. We still use them like in modern astronomy. Everybody knows them who's working in physics and NASA, you know, astronauts know them. But they're also stories. Like, you don't just look at them and look at the patterns. You know who they are and what their background is. You're like, oh, that's Orion. He's the hunter. He's up there because, you know, you've heard some – and the versions are all different. But I love the idea that they're real things. And there's stories that are always kind of changing. But I always liked – I like the part where they get put up in the sky and then I always wanted to know and then what? So are they really up there? Are they just like memorialized so we remember them? Or like are they there? Can they see us? If they can see us and they're up there, what are they doing? Could they come back down and visit? So I just wrote stories about what if that happened.
Well, and as this book opens, Honorine is working as a maid. She is a I don't know that she would use this term, but middle grade girl.
Yes. For like the age range.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's 12 when the story starts, which is solid middle grade for age ranges. Middle grade is
like 8 to 12.
Yeah, 8 to 12. And then young adult starts at like 13. So and this is an absolutely fantastic time for middle grade and young adult literature in general. We're going through like a renaissance of publishing. So lots of fascinating stories for that age range. But yeah, that's where she is at the beginning.
And she doesn't really know much about her background or how she even came to become a maid there.
No. And that's kind of, without giving too much away, intentional. Like she's a maid for kind of her own protection at the beginning of the story. As she finds out quickly, we get into the action pretty quickly.
Right, and it becomes. It's an adventure story. It's also kind of a voyage of discovery for her.
Mm-hmm. That's a really common theme for that age range. Middle grade is often like you're finding your place in your family is usually the theme for that age range, and then young adults, you get out more into the world. She does a little bit of both. She gets to see where she fits in her family, and she gets a little peek at the bigger world around her that she's a part of. But she's just about old enough now to start interacting with it.
And as is the case for many, I have read many middle grade novels in my time.
Good.
Partly when I was a middle grader myself and partly with a couple of middle graders at home.
Nice.
There is definitely a theme in this that she is more resourceful than she realizes from the get-go. Or maybe she already knows she's resourceful.
Oh, I think she knows she is. I don't think she totally understands that that's kind of different in any way. She just – you know, a lot of kids that age just – they are who they are, right? And it's about learning your talents and your skills and what makes you unique. You know, kids don't always – they know a lot more than you realize, but that's about figuring out yourself, you know? That's that age.
Fantasy is always tricky because, you know, by its nature, it does not have to be realistic. But at the same time, for it to work, you must have to set up some rules for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. World building is totally key. But yeah, it has to have a really, really solid structure and solid rules so that even when things are sort of nonsense is happening, the audience can follow it. You know, the reader understands what's going on and they can see – you need to be able to telegraph to them things that are going to be obstacles versus things that, you know, magic will fix. Because if magic fixes everything, there's no conflict. There's no
right.
story. So they have to know that, like, characters that have magic powers, what are the limits of those powers? And then watch them, you know, then as a writer, the tough part is you have to throw your characters up against those limits.
Well, and at the same time, you can't give away the store right at the beginning. You can't say, well, this isn't going to work when it comes up later, but this mm-hmm. is going to work when it comes up later. Some of it is showing and not telling.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you have to let the characters stumble around a little bit, make some mistakes, and then show how they deal with it. Again, that should be the fun part of the story.
How did the books that you read at that age influence the book that this became? You know, Nautilus jumped out at me, and immediately I started thinking Jules Verne.
Oh, interestingly enough, yes, absolutely. It's sort of – now we would consider him kind of steampunky, but at the time he was just –
Science fiction, sure.
Of his age. And Honorine, I found out, this was well after I had written the book and just about the time it sold, that was actually the name of Jules Verne's wife.
Huh.
I had no idea. I just read that. I read that a long time ago and it was like, that's a character and I can write about her. But at that age, I was reading kind of all over the place. I was always the like advanced reader in the class, so teachers would just give you – let you read whatever you wanted. So I was all over the board into adult literature and still kids literature. But definitely fairy tales and like classic fantasy, the stuff that has based in around 19th century
sure.
when it was written, obviously that had a big impact.
So C.S. Lewis.
Yes. Yeah. You know, Barry, the Peter Pan books, Oz, stuff like that, fantasy world, you know, all of that.
Why, when you sat down, you said you have a couple of books in the drawer already. Why was this the age that you wanted to write for?
So when it came to picking this, I've kind of always been a writer. I've been writing since I was a little kid. Right about the time I was finishing school at UWM for fine arts, I decided I wanted to try writing something at some point. Shortly after that, it's always what, like how, what are you going to write about? But I ended up getting a job at the Barnes & Noble that's out in Brookfield.
Sure.
And for about a year, I worked in the kids' department. And I started reading that, and I instantly had ideas. I was like, this is the age. You know, and right after college, you're so focused on, like, adult work and making serious work. So not that there's anything not serious about kids' books. It just wasn't kind of on my radar. But once I started reading them, I just had ideas, and I had things that interested me enough to keep you writing for 300 pages.
Well, and a number of the middle grade readers – or writers, rather, I've spoken with have talked about the middle grade audience is so important – or is so enjoyable to write for because relationships aren't as complicated. You don't have to worry about the boy-girl relationships coming with the same kind of baggage that they do once you get to an older audience.
A little bit. I think there's more middle grade that's dealing with that now. There is a lot more sort of early relationshipy stuff going on. But yeah, it's usually a lot tamer. And again, it's all about kids sort of learning what they're interested in. That's the age where you kind of go, oh, I like people. Like, who do I like? So yeah, and that's enough at that age, right? It's enough to just suggest it. But the relationships between friends and parents and teachers and mentors are just as complex as any others. There's not a lot of romance usually.
Right.
That's kind of hinted at, but it's not. One that has the best romance story that I think in a – for a middle grade audience is the last Philip Pullman book, The Amber Spyglass. Oh, that one breaks my heart.
How well – you know, of course, Honorine is discovering the realities of this world that she suddenly finds herself thrust into. And again, we'll avoid giving away too much. But how well did you already know the world as you, you know, got into the process of writing this? And how much of it was your own discovery as, you know, how rigidly plotted was it before you actually sat down and wrote it?
Okay. So I am the right by the seat of your pants model.
Mm-hmm.
Usually nothing is really plotted when I first – like for a first draft. I just try to get everything down on paper. So a lot of it, I learn as I go. But yeah, there's a general idea. There's a time. There's a general setting. There's an end game, right? I know sort of where they're headed. But I do a lot of that on the page and sort of work it out as I go.
How long was this book in progress?
The very, very, very first draft of this that I ever wrote, I wrote at the end of 2008. And then about a year later, I started looking for an agent. I found one about 3.5 years later. Took us another year to sell it. Although we had interest right away, my whole process has been revise and resubmit. Everybody that's read it, like right from the beginning when I started looking for a publisher and an agent, a lot of interest but a lot of requests for a little bit more work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I started writing this 9 years ago.
Well, and so do you ever go back and look at what some of those early drafts looked like?
A lot of them are just sort of gone. I write everything on a computer.
Sure.
I'm not a hand – I can't physically write out that long of a manuscript with pen and paper.
But nine years is a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you become a different writer in 9 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Presumably.
And the very early drafts are on a computer that I no longer own, you know, on an operating system that doesn't exist. I think the very first things I saved were on a legit
floppy disk.
Yep. There were some of those. So and during that kind of revising, there's not a hard copy to keep of every draft. Right. So a lot of it is – each draft is aside from the ones that got submitted to agents and editors, the other ones have sort of vanished. But the three central characters, if you read the very first draft, they're still in there, and a lot of what they do would still be in there. But
do you feel like you got more confident about how this book was going to play out the longer you were into the revising process?
I really did. The thing that kept me going on this was that right from the beginning, the first time I sent it to any agents at all, of course, you get no's. Everybody does. That's like the badge of honor. If you get a rejection from an agent, you are a real writer. You've done it. So, but I at the same time, I was getting encouragement. For every rejection I got, there would be we would like to see more. So I knew I had a good idea, and I knew that it was worth it to keep putting time and effort into it because I kept getting more encouraging responses. But that will boost your confidence. When someone who knows what they're talking about reads it and says there's something here, you should keep going, that helps.
Well, and it has to be something to be thinking about the first draft coming together 9 years ago and then here's this completed book on the counter in front of me here.
Yeah, there's a lot of work. I mean, it's a long enough book, but to look at it, yeah, you don't see the number of years that are in there. But I think that's kind of any book. Now that I've been through the process, when I read things too quickly, I kind of feel a little bad. Like, I know how long that took. Like, they probably spent years on this, and I finished it in a weekend.
the way the book ends, it leads one to believe that that we have not seen or heard the last of these characters. Are there other books already in the works? Are there thoughts about it? Or are you just leaving the door open?
It's a little bit leaving the door open at this point. I mean, after that amount of time and that amount of writing, there's material. I could definitely tell more stories. And also, you know, my favorite endings, especially for a middle grade audience, are the sort of open-ended ones where you've spent enough time and the characters are developed enough. You can see them going off and doing other things and continuing their life. At this point, no, there's not a definite sequel, but I could absolutely write more at some point. I may. I'm letting them rest for a second.
But Honorine and the Mapmaker and Nautilus aren't in your head right now shouting, let us out!
They pop up every once in a while when I'm working on things. And they're like, hey, don't forget about us. we still have things we'd like to do.
Well, Lindsay Becker, it is a really entertaining story. Thank you so much for spending some time with us, and congratulations.
Thank you very much for having me.
Wisconsin writer Lindsay Becker's new book for middle grade readers is called The Star Thief. She'll talk about it tonight at Milwaukee's Boswell Book Company.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder where you are. Up above the sky so high, like a diamond in the night.